This is Guildcast, episode 14 for February 12th, 2006. Welcome back to Guildcast, everyone. I'm your host, Sean, and we got a pretty packed show this week. We got everything from the basics of salvaging to a pretty nice minion factory build in the brand new skills and build section. And I wanted to say hi to a couple people in the game. There's Amber Red, Carmen Rose, Terra the Monk, Blood Gospel, Lord Dobo, and Satchel X-Core. And I've been adding a few new things to the website as I go along. And one thing I added actually last week was a Frapper map. And if you don't know what Frapper is, it's pretty much they use Google Maps, and you go on there and you you put in your zip code, and then they put a little marker where you live, kind of a general idea, nothing specific, but just to kind of give an idea of where people live in a certain group. And there's a lot of groups that use Frapper, and actually there's a lot of guilds that use Frapper, just so you can get a general idea of where all the people live in your guild or whatever. So I just decided I would go ahead and add something like that on my site. And I had it in the message boards for about a week now, just to try it out for a little while. And I wanted to see if people had an issue with, you know, people knowing what part of the country they live in or whatever. But it seems like everybody, the few people who've done it so far, seem like they didn't have a problem with it. So I'm going to go ahead and add a link to that on the main page. And if you'd like to participate, you can. You don't have to, but it's something that I thought might be kind of interesting for some people, especially just to kind of get a general idea of where the Guildcast listeners are located throughout the whole world. I know so far, I think I've only got one outside of the U.S. Because I know, according to my stats, there's quite a few different countries that listen to the podcast. So I just thought it would be kind of interesting to get a little bit more visual on where everyone's located. Also, the poll results from the last week's poll on the website, I asked about how you spend most of your time in the game. And with 39% of the vote, helping guild members won that poll. And I'm going to put a new poll up. I haven't really decided yet, but I will. By the time this is posted, I'll have a new poll set up. So you can go ahead and check that out and participate if you'd like. And also, don't forget to sign up for the message boards. There's plenty of discussion on there relating to not only Guild Wars things, but there's some other off-topic items here and there. Which reminds me, I wanted to post a question on there. Every once in a while, I'll put little questions on there for people. Like, I think last week, or a couple days ago, I put a thing on there saying, if you could live anywhere in Tyria, where would it be? Between post-searing, pre-searing. And most people put the area around, Lion's Arch, North Crida, things like that, which is understandable. I actually said the area in Regent's Valley, like a nice forested area in Regent's Valley near the river. I think that'd be kind of cool to live in. But I wanted to post another question on there this time. This is just purely curiosity, because it's become an issue where I have several characters. I just recently got another account, and the majority of my characters are female. And I've had some people ask me, why do you play female characters? Well, I haven't really thought about it like that. It didn't really become an issue to me. I just basically did it just because I liked the way that particular profession looked as a female or whatever, you know, just to kind of mix it up a little bit. But the question I'm going to post in the message board is, if you're male and you have female characters, do you have an issue with that? Or do you find that people treat you differently between your male and female characters? And do you act differently? That's another thing I've always wondered. I don't particularly act differently. You know, people still call me he and him when they refer to me. I think a lot of people just assume that even though you're playing a female character, you're still a male. And that holds true for the opposite, too. If you're a female and you have male characters, has that ever become an issue for you where you've either acted differently or people have treated you differently? So I'm putting that up on the message board, just something to kind of discuss and debate a little bit, and I'd be interested in finding out what people have to say about that. So you can go ahead and register for the message board and check that out and take part in that discussion. And now on to the recent game updates. On Monday, February 6th, they did a few updates. They added traditional Chinese translations in preparation for that day's launch of Guild Wars in Taiwan, Hong Kong, and Macau. They fixed a recently introduced bug that players could exploit to attack their own teammates. They fixed a problem that could cause players to get redirected to international districts after playing an arena battle. And then on Thursday, February 9th, they enabled sending invitations for the Factions preview event, which I'll talk about in a second in a little bit more detail. And this one, this latest update, I find kind of interesting because I actually got to experience it a little bit. On Friday, February 10th, they fixed an exploit that could allow players to bring high-level items into pre-searing Ascalon. And the way this worked, let me explain this a little bit, because it was pretty interesting the way it worked. And the only reason I'm explaining it, actually, is because it's already been fixed, and you can't do it anymore. But what you did was, if you had a pre-searing character, you go in observer mode, you press B, go in observer mode, and then you can press G to view your guild information. And this only worked if you were in a guild. And when you view your guild window, up on the top right-hand corner, it has that little button that says Guild Hall. And when you press that, it takes you to the Guild Hall. Well, you can pretty much imagine where it goes from here. What you could do is you could get either a second account or a guildie, and they would go in the Guild Hall also, and you would trade items. Like, you would use your post-searing character, and you would give your guildie whatever weapons you wanted to transfer over to pre-searing. Then he would hold them. You would disconnect, reconnect as your pre-searing character, like I said, through observer mode and the Guild Hall button, and then your guildie would give you back the items. I actually tried this, and like I said, I only say this because it's already been nerfed, but I have a picture on the show notes of me standing next to Gwen with my pre-searing character right outside of Ascalon holding a nice bright glowing chaos axe, which has pretty much made it all worth it just to exploit that bug a little bit there, just for that picture. Now, if I get those items taken away now, I'll know to keep my big mouth shut next time, but I just thought it was pretty interesting. We'll just keep that between us, okay? So then anyway, on to the Factions preview event I just mentioned. It will take place on March 24th, and a little bit that they talk about on the website. If you go to the main website, guildwars.com, you can see there's a picture on the front, and it shows a male ritualist, a female assassin, what seems to be a female mesmer with some funky armor. I don't know if that's a mesmer or not, but it seems like it. And then a male warrior with some just awesome-looking armor. And then there's a female ritualist standing next to him. And with these new armors they have on there are pretty neat. And I'm wondering if that's actually... Yeah, these look like they're actual characters, so I imagine these armors are going to be introduced. But a little bit more about that event. This is what the website says. The FPE, which is the Factions Preview event, is a weekend event that gives gamers a sneak peek at the wonders of Cantha, the featured land of Guild Wars factions, and invites them to experience some of the new gameplay options. Players will have the opportunity to explore part of this large new game world, to try out new gameplay mechanics, to learn a bit about the story of factions, to see some of the diverse new creatures and monsters, to play the two new professions, the Assassin and the Ritualist, and to experience some of the immerse new missions and quests. And basically this will start at 12:01 a.m. Pacific Standard Time on Friday morning, March 24th, and it will end at 11:59 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on Sunday night, March 26th. So it'll just last through the weekend, and the biggest difference between this and that PvP weekend is that this will include PvE also. So from what I gather from this, they say it'll be the full game, but it'll just last the weekend. And they say also players will be able to create new characters, including assassins and ritualists, on the new continent of Cantha. For beta testing purposes, these new characters will start at a high level with high-level weapons and armor, and will jump right into the middle of the faction's campaign, where they will be able to play through four of the missions. Okay, so it's just four of the missions. They will also be able to create Assassin and Ritualist PvP characters and unlock Assassin and Ritualist skills onto their accounts. Basically, that's what this talks about, is that whole weekend. And also, another feature of that is, if you've signed into Guild Wars in the last 3 days or so, you can tell that there's a new little window up in the right-hand corner that will give you a key that will allow you to invite three of your friends to play Guild Wars. And they'll get to experience the same things you get to experience, and they don't have to buy the game. It's pretty much a demo for them. Plus, there's another big piece of news concerning this whole weekend will be the pre-order. They're talking about the availability of the pre-order, and they say it will hit store shelves in the United States on February 28th. Players in Europe and certain other countries will be able to acquire a downloadable version of the pre-order at around the same time. Details will follow as they become available. So February 28th will be when you can start the pre-order. Best Buy and a few other stores have already started accepting pre-orders. But here it is on the website, on the Guild Wars official website, in writing, saying that February 28th is when you can start the pre-order. There's also been some talk from Gail Gray, how she, you know how she normally goes into Lion's Arch International District 1, or somewhere around there, and she'll, whenever there's a new update or a new announcement, such as this new preview event, she'll come on there and she'll answer some questions, which is something that most games don't do. Actually, I don't even know of any other games, MMOs, where the developers interact with the players as much as Guild Wars does. So she was on there, and I read through, I didn't get to experience it this time, but I read through a few of the logs where people took screenshots of what she talked about. And a lot of it was, you know, stuff we already knew, and she's joking around here and there. But one thing that I found quite interesting that I'm really excited about, and is something that I've wanted Guild Wars to introduce for a while now, is I'll read this quote from her. She says, "Skill set saving and even armor set saving is a known request. I would expect that may happen." She said that on February 9th, and if they do introduce that with factions where you can save a skill set, I do that a lot with my warrior, where I will, I'll be set up for a runner, so I'll throw on sprint and charge and things like that. And then when I want to go back to my regular tank build, you know, I have to sit there and look through all the skills and go, which one did I have on this spot, and, you know, and things like that. And this skill set saving would be just huge to me. It would be a real big deal. Now, there's something that I found on a forum on gwonline.net that I want to talk about, and it's pretty big news, I think. It's this new utility that was created by some guys named the Reno Brothers, and the name of the utility is The Edge, and I'll put a link to it on the website. But it's this utility where you can set up builds. There's a whole list of all the skills available in the game, 602. Including Resurrection Signet and Signet of Capture. And that includes the new skills, too, for the Assassin Ritualist. And what you do is you set up your build, and the build screen looks exactly like it does on Guild Wars. And they also actually have the picture of each skill also. And you drag them up to your skill bar, and you can make your build, and you can make your enemy's build. You set these two up against each other. There's also you can adjust your attribute points. You can adjust your, if you have any runes or anything like that, you can adjust your armor, your weapon, anything. It's really versatile. And you set these things up, and you can set up your enemies also in the exact same way. And this is a way to check out what is the best build for, you know, that you can use and against certain enemies. And I think this is something that would really come in handy for PvP. So for all you people who think I don't talk enough about PvP, here it is. This is made for PvP right here. One of the biggest things I can see about PvE with this relating to is the doppelganger. This would come in really handy for the doppelganger, I think. Anyway, what it is you set up these two builds up against each other and with all the modifiers that you can think of, and you can actually have them battle against each other. Now, they simulate a battle, and it has everything from where you actually click on, you know, your skills to have them activated. And the AI for it, of course, is not going to be like Guild Wars AI. This is just a simple free program. So I think actually what they say on their website, on the Edge's website, or no, not the website, the on the README file, is something pertaining to this. They say, please remember, this is not meant to completely model all aspects of Guild Wars battles, which would be too complex. Its primary function is to have fun and to give you an idea of what your skills can do. Many of the effects of the skills are modeled, and new ones will continue to be added. Because of the complexity, not all functions of every skill will work. That's why Guild Wars has been in development for 5 years. And that's a good point there, is, you know, like I said, this is a free utility, and this is something to basically simulate what builds will do up against each other. And I think it's fantastic. I played around with it for a little while, and it's really something that I recommend for everyone to download. And I'm going to have a link to it on the website, on the show notes for today. And this is sponsored by, well, I don't know if it's sponsored by, but it says content provider, gwonline.net. And they also have, from their menu bar, one of the menu items is other data. And from there, you can check out guides on gwonline.net, such as armor crafting, a bestiary, commands, conditions, runes, salvage items, where you click on these up in the menu bar, and it'll take you to the appropriate guide on gwonline.net. So yeah, I definitely recommend people download this and check it out. You know, it's free, it can't hurt, and it's at least a good way to save your builds, because you can save these builds and check them out. And then also they have it set up to where if ArenaNet updates these builds, a lot of times they'll change skills and, you know, nerf certain things that people find exploitable. Then the people who make this utility will update theirs as well, and then you can update a patch or the latest data regarding that. And now I wanted to go over some of the emails that I've received in the last week. And one of them is from a guy with a character named Amber Red. And he and I have been discussing his guild lately. And he has this idea for a new guild that he has already established, but he's looking for more people. And I'm usually not one for shameless promotion on this podcast as far as recruiting for guilds. But he has some ideas that he swears by. And I told him I'd give him a hand and announce a little bit about what his idea is for this new guild. And this is what he says in his email. He says, I've started a new guild after your Guild Wars Factions feature, Episode 9, the aim of which is to help its members in the Ascalon mission and eventually be a force to reckon with in factions. He says, I would appreciate it if you spoke briefly on this new guild, as I expect it to play a big role in the factions campaign. It's probably the first Ascalon Cantha-related guild out there. It's called Strength of the Worlds, led by me. And he also mentions a little bit more about it. He says, Strength of the Worlds is going to try and cover all Guild Wars releases from here on, and we're brand new, but we're growing. Don't expect any quick PvP or GVG action. And if anyone is interested, they can contact either Amber Red, the leader, or Sir Grizzly C, the right-hand man and first officer of the guild. So basically what he's saying is it's going to be a guild that focuses on the new factions campaign and going from the prophecies campaign to the factions campaign, basically. So if anyone's interested in joining this guild, you can do, like he said, contact him, Amber Red, or Sir Grizzly C. And again, this is something that I've done only because we've been discussing it for a while, and so I'm not going to be promoting any more guilds. This is just a new idea he had and something he wanted to be announced. And another email I got is from a guy with his in-game name of Kronos Khan. I'll read a little bit of his email. He says, I've been playing since the WPE of Guild Wars in October of 2004, and I enjoy how you help out people via podcast, whether it is certain builds or the latest scams. Helping new people be aware of scams and such is always a good thing towards the community. To the caller on episode 13, a little tidbit about Ektos. Ektos used to be in the range from 11k to 19k, so Ekto, as of February of 2006, are in the range of 7k to 8k, which is a great bargain. And then he talks about the economy in this game is quite crazy, but the caller can use guildwarsguru.com since they have a section on the forum called Price Check, where people check the prices of their items and all come together to get a focused price on that item. It's very useful for those who are not informed on the economy of Guild Wars to go there and get informed on items. There's also an auction house on Guild Wars Guru.com, at www.guildwarsguru.com/auction. And I've checked that out a few times, and it seems to be pretty fair. Although there are some items on there that are ridiculously expensive, but I guess it's supply and demand. Whatever people are willing to pay, they'll pay, you know. So thank you, Kronos Khan, for that email. And also I received a few voicemails. I got two of them this time, which is a new all-time record. So I'm going to go ahead and play those both right now.
Hey, Sean. This is Mattias F. Powell. Calling. Thank you for the last podcast that had the information regarding the prices of items and getting a better ballpark. You provided some good tips, and I just wanted to say thanks again and keep up the good work.
Hey, Sean. This is Lady Sinea calling from the San Francisco area. I wanted to say that I really like the idea you mentioned in your last episode of having a segment where you go over the use of different skills. What you've had in the show so far has been really good, but it'll probably be a nice change to have some more advanced principles thrown in as well. I have a question, though. When you or your guildie start discussing the featured skill or skills, are you going to focus mainly on PvP, PvE, or both? What you're going to use your skills for is going to make a big difference on which you use, how you use them, or how you set your skill bar, or things like that. I figured I'd ask what your plans are for this, because I know everyone has their own little niche that they like to play in, and they're kind of expert in their own little ways. Anyway, Sean, keep up the good work, and I'll keep tuning in.
Well, I thank you both for your calls, and to answer Lady Sinea's question, I will segue into the skills and builds section. This is the first installment of the new skills and builds segment that I'll be doing every week. And what I'll do in this segment is I'll talk about one main skill or one main build. And if I talk about a skill, I'll name where to find it in a quest, where to capture it from, or where to buy it. And I'll discuss it in detail and give some examples of its use. Now, if I talk about a build, I'll do the same thing, and it'll focus around one main skill, but then I'll extend the discussion to include all of the details of all the skills in the rest of the build. So that way, if I did one skill every week, there's 602 skills, that would take a while. So with these build discussions, it's going to cover a lot more ground at one time. Now, this skills and build segment will feature the spell Verata's Sacrifice, and in conjunction with the spell is my idea for the perfect minion factory. Now, I don't say minion master, because minion master is more someone who not only creates minions, but also uses them to the party's advantage. This build here is just a minion factory, which is building and maintaining minions, and that's it. Letting the minions do their damage that they do, but you just maintain the minions and keep them alive. I'll focus primarily on Verata's Sacrifice, but I'll talk about the other skills and spells in the minion factory build that I've found to be the best. For a little backstory on Verata, where this spell gets its name from, Verata, he might sound familiar to the newer Necromancer players, because he's one of the profession trainers that you see in pre-searing right outside of Ascalon City in Lakeside County when you first start the game. And at that point, he's only level 2, but then you'll see him again later in the game as a level 24. And then next time you see him, he's an enemy, actually, in Traveler's Vale. And you see him during the quest Renegade Necromancer. And he'll escape you in that quest. You can't really kill him, because he will come back and make it a reappearance in Keswick's Peak at the Wizard's Tower. And when you get that quest, Renegade Necromancer, you get it from Necromancer Morgan in Yak's Bend, and he will tell you a little bit more information on our friend Verata. He says, "As you've no doubt heard, there's been a number of recent disappearances among the townsfolk. Thus far, we've assumed they fell victim to the Stone Summit or other local menaces. The truth, Grunth forgive us, is something much, much worse. One of our order, a promising necromancer named Verata, has been experimenting with new ways to enhance and maintain summoned minions. Normally this would be a good thing, however, in his lust for power, Verata has been kidnapping Ascalon citizens for use in his experiments. He was also spotted waylaying travelers coming up into the mountains from Ascalon. We must stop him, quickly and discreetly, before anyone can link the disappearances with our order." So that gives you a little bit of an idea of what this is about. This spell, Verata's Sacrifice, is something that Virata developed to better maintain his minions, which is exactly what we want to do. So the build is something like this. You start out, you'll be a necromancer monk, and the eight skills on your skill bar will be Virata's Sacrifice, Blood of the Master, Animate Bone Fiend, Animate Bone Horror, Heal Area, Healing Breeze, Purge Conditions, and Restore Life. And put as many attributes as you can into death and healing prayers, with the remaining going into soul reaping. And so now I'll talk a little bit about each skill in more detail. Starting with our main skill, Virata Sacrifice. You sacrifice 15% maximum health. For 8 to 18 seconds, all undead allies gain 10 health regeneration. All conditions are removed from those allies and transferred to you. It is possible to get the duration higher with add-ons to your death magic attribute through use of runes, a scar pattern, or weapon mods. It has an energy cost of 10, activation time of 2 seconds, and a recharge time of 30 seconds. Now, there are no quests to get this skill from, but you can buy it from Gamel in Copperhead Mines or Dak in Emberlight Camp, which is actually where you can buy all skills. Dak and Ember Light Camp is toward the end of the game, so you can any skill you need that you may have missed throughout the game, you can buy from him. You can also capture this from Virata the Necromancer in Kessick's Peak, like I mentioned earlier. Now, Kessick's Peak is the area where the Villainy of Galrath quest takes you. But the trick to this is that the only way Virata will spawn in that at the tower is if you don't have the quest. So if you've already done the quest, then you can go and try to capture this from Virata. See, because the thing is, if you have the Villainy of Galrath quest, once you get to that point, Galrath will appear, and not anyone else. It'll be Galrath. But if you don't have the quest, then Virata will appear. The second skill on that build is Blood of the Master. You sacrifice 10% of your maximum health. All adjacent undead allies are healed for 30 to 99 points. Energy cost is 10, activation time 1 second, and recharge time 5 seconds. This is kind of a quicker, but not nearly as powerful, alternative to Virata's Sacrifice. It can be obtained from the quest The Hot Springs Murder in the Nebo Terrace. It can be purchased from Sorum in Coral Falls, Master Scout Kira in Henge of Denravi, or of course Dak in Emberlight Camp. The third spell is Animate Bone Fiend. Exploit nearest corpse to animate a level 1 through 14 Bone Fiend. Bone Fiends can attack at range. Energy cost 25, activation time 3, recharge time 5. Now, Bone Fiends attack every 2 seconds, which is faster than the Bone Horrors, which attack every 3 seconds. They have less armor than the Bone Horrors, though, but with an extra second in there for them to attack, they actually do more damage than the Bone Horrors. A Bone Fiend's armor increases by roughly 3 per level, and the health increases by 20 per level. And this spell can be obtained from the quest The Forgotten Ones in Destiny's Gorge, or purchased from Bartok on Drachner's Forge, and of course Dak. It can also be captured from Lord Timmit in Scoundrel's Rise during the quest Reversing the Scales, and also from Gazel the Corruptor in the Sanctum K mission. The next spell we have is Animate Bone Horror. You exploit nearest corpse to animate a level 1 through 14 Bone Horror. Energy costs 15, activation time 3, and recharge time 5. The best use of a Bone Horror really is a meat shield. They're slow and they don't deal as much damage as the Bone Fiends, like I said, but they're really good for blocking. If you have a bunch of Bone Horrors, when you attack, they run up forward and they pretty much body block the enemies, keeping them up so that the other players in your party can attack with spells. The quests that give you this skill are the Necromancer's Novice, which is a pre-searing quest you get in the catacombs. Also, there's the Stolen Artifact in Sardalek Sanitarium. Skill trainers for this are Sir Bertrand in Ascalon City. That's post-searing Ascalon City. And then, of course, Dak in Emberlight Camp. The next spell is Heal Area. You heal yourself and all adjacent creatures for 30 to 150 points. Energy cost 10, activation time 1, and recharge time 5. Now, this is a really powerful spell for healing, because it can give you, when you're maxed out, you know, it can give you upwards of 150 points of healing. But the biggest drawback of this is if you're standing too close to enemies, it'll heal them also. This is something that I don't think a lot of people really understand, because you'll see people right up there on the front lines casting this spell, and it's counterproductive because they're healing their own enemies. But this, the reason this is good for a minion factory build is you stay back, and the best time you use this is after the battle is done. When you've killed everything, your minions run back to you and stand around you. So that's when you cast it, and it'll heal all your minions that are huddled around you. You get this from the quest Protecting Old Ascalon. It's in Old Ascalon, that quest is. And you can buy it from Captain Osric in Yak's Bend, and of course Dak. It can be captured by the Char Monk boss Tag Relic Binder in the Breach. Now for the next spell, we have Healing Breeze. For 10 seconds, target ally gains health regeneration of 3 to 8. Now, 3 to 8 might not seem like a lot, but for 10 seconds, that can add up to more than, say, a Horizon of Healing can do at its max. Plus, it's a good spell to cast on yourself before you do a health-sacrificing skill, such as Verata's Sacrifice or Blood of the Master. You cast that first, then you cast Verata's Sacrifice or Blood of the Master, and it'll heal you back for that 15 or 10% health that you sacrificed. The energy cost of this is 10. Activation time is 1 second, and recharge time is 2 seconds. It's one of the first skills you get as a monk in Pre-Syrian Lakeside County in the quest Monk Test. You can also buy it from Sir Bertrand in Ascalon City and Dak in Emberlight Camp. Now, there are 4 bosses you can capture this from also. There's Gordok Stone Soul in Sorrow's Furnace, Raha Crux in Divinity Coast, Sacred Griffin of Amnoon in Prophet's Path, and Soul Sandstorm in the Salt Flats. Our next spell is Purge Conditions. Remove all conditions, poison, disease, blindness, dazed, bleeding, crippled, and deep wound from target ally. And even though it's not listed, this skill will also remove weakness and burning. It has an energy cost of 5, activation time of 0.25 seconds, and recharge time of 20 seconds, which is probably its biggest drawback, the 20-second recharge time. The only reason I have this in this build is just in case, with Verata's Sacrifice, you transfer the conditions that any of your minions might have onto yourself. So you use this spell to remove the condition once you've transferred it to yourself. You get this spell from a quest, Supplies for the Duke in Old Ascalon, and you can buy it from either Captain Osric in Yak's Bend or Dak in Emberlight King. And for the last spell, we have the Resurrection spell, Restore Life. You touch the body of a fallen party member. Target party member is returned to life with 26 to 45% health and 42 to 80% energy. Now, a lot of people say that Rebirth is a better res skill because you can actually teleport the character to your location, which comes in handy when your group dies and there's still enemies around. But the reason I have Restore Life in here is because, for one, it heals you for more. In this build, you have healing prayers as one of your attributes, and Restore Life uses healing prayers, whereas Rebirth uses protection prayers. Rebirth doesn't give back as much energy or health as Restore Life does. Plus, Restore Life doesn't drain all your remaining energy like Rebirth does, which can come in handy when you're in a tight spot. And one thing you might want to do before you res someone is a little underhanded trick that some people get offended by, but I don't see any harm in it, is you actually make a Bone Fiend or Bone Horror out of your dead buddy before you res him. So don't forget to do that. Now, the energy cost on this is 10, the activation time is 8, and the recharge time is 0. This can be bought from Tal Tosh in Grendich Courthouse, Captain Osric in Yak's Bend, or Dak in Ember Light Camp. You can capture it from Gak Splotch Plunk in the Watchtower Coast. Now, in this Basics of the Game segment, I'm going to talk about salvaging. When to salvage, how to salvage, what are the best kits to use to salvage certain items, what you can get from salvaging, everything like that. And what's ironic about this is actually, I believe in the first episode, I talked about how all the things I'm going to talk about, you know, in future episodes, and I said, well, I'm not really going to talk about things such as salvage kits. Well, I'm eating my words now because I've changed the show a lot since then, and it's actually salvaging is actually a big part of the game, and it's pretty important to a lot of the things you can do. There's so many different uses for salvaging, basically. So that's what I'm going to talk about this time. Basically, there's three different kinds of salvage kits. There's the regular salvage kit. It's 25 uses, and it's 100 gold. Now, the regular salvage kit you get in pre-searing only has 10 uses, and it's 40 gold. But we're just talking about post-searing now, and that's 25 uses for 100 gold. And that's just to get any kind of common crafting materials out of an item. Then there's the expert salvage kit, which is also 25 uses, but it's 400 gold. And I'll go into a little bit more about why that's 400 gold. And then there's the superior salvage kit, which is basically an expert salvage kit, but with 100 uses. And to me, it's not really worth it because it's 2K for the superior. And when you break it down, it's actually a little bit more expensive. But the reason you're paying that extra money is so that you can keep one salvage kit in your inventory. It kind of saves space, as opposed to having to go back and buy another one every 100 uses. After every 25 uses. So what a salvage kit does is I'll start with the basic salvage kit. What it does basically is you get an item. Say you find a sword, and it's a white sword. You know, the writing is in white, and it just says long sword. You double-click on the salvage kit, and then you double-click on the item you want to salvage in your inventory, and it'll basically turn that item into crafting materials. And with a long sword, it'll either be iron ingot or wood planks. And what I'm going to do in regards to this is I'm going to put a link up to a wonderful guide on gwonline.net, which is my absolute favorite website for research. I'm going to put a link to a guide that they have on there where someone has researched what materials come from what item. And it's a really handy little chart. So I'm going to put that on there. And I'm also going to put one up for runes, too, which I'll talk about in a second. But anyway, getting back to the salvage kit. You salvage items, basic items, for crafting materials. Now, these crafting materials can group up in what are called stacks of 250 quantity of each item. And you can use these crafting materials either for armor, for crafting your own armor. You can sell them to other people who might need them. You can use them to actually craft other crafting materials, such as a good example is wood. You can take wood to a material crafter, and they will craft the wood into parchment. And the parchment is used for professions like monks and necromancers, mainly for the tattoo armor. And the iron can be used, for other parts of armor, things like that. Now, you can also use that basic salvage kit for items such as blue, purple, and gold, not only white. But the drawback of that is it only gives you crafting materials. Which brings us to the expert salvage kit, which will give you other items such as runes or weapon mods. Now, let me explain that a little bit. Let's say you have a purple longsword with modifications on it. Say it's like a sundering longsword of enchanting. Now, if you use an expert salvage kit on that, there are three choices that you can get off of that you can turn that sundering longsword of enchanting into. It'll either turn into crafting materials, which is usually in an instance like that, it'll be a lot of crafting materials, say like 10 wood planks or something. Or you can get the sword pommel, or you can get the sword hilt. Basically, for each weapon, there's different slots available for that weapon. Like I said, for the sword, they have the hilt and the pommel. For the axe, it's the axe grip and the axe haft. For the hammer, it's the grip and the haft. And for staves, it's the staff head and the staff wrapping. So you have a chance, and let me say that again, a chance of getting one of those two modifications off of that item. A good example of this not working out good is last week I found a staff, and it had an armor plus 7, which is max armor. I think it was a staff wrapping it had. And so it had the armor plus 7. The rest of the other mod wasn't that great, but it was a gold item, and I thought, well, I'm going to go ahead and chance it. I'm going to risk getting that head off of there, or the wrapping, whatever it was, I forgot, just to try to get that mod off there. Well, I took that chance, and I pretty much lost, because it turned into 5 wood planks. So just to let you know, there's always that chance. Now also, when these higher level or the higher quality weapons like purple and gold, when they're salvaged with the expert salvage kit, like I said, they can also turn into rare crafting materials. This doesn't work as much as it does with salvage items. Now, there's something actually called a salvageable item, and that's usually armors. Like if you kill something and it leaves its armor, like you kill a White Mantle, and his Justicar armor comes off, and you pick that up, you can salvage that. And if it's just white, you'll get the materials. And if you use an expert salvage kit, you have more of a chance of getting a rare material. If you use a basic salvage kit, you'll get basic materials. If this armor that you picked up is gold or purple, you will have a chance to get a rune. Now, runes, like I said before, I'm going to have a chart listed of the different runes that are available. But basically, it seems like the way they made the game, if you find a gold, something salvageable that's gold, and you salvage it with an expert salvage kit, you're more than likely going to get a purple rune. You're not going to get a gold rune, although sometimes you will. Sometimes you will get the gold rune. But you'll get that rune off there, and runes you can use for your armor. Say you get a major death rune, major death magic, that adds to your necromancer's death magic skills. So let's say it's major, so that's +2. It adds +2 to your death magic attributes. You double-click on that rune, and then you click on your armor, and each piece of armor on your body has one slot that it can add. Now, this can get really complicated, because some of these runes aren't stackable, such as Vigor. You can get by a superior Vigor, or you can apply a superior Vigor rune, which is +75 health. You can apply that to one of your armors, but then you can't apply another one. It won't stack. 75 is all you got. Absorption will stack. You can put a superior absorption rune on each one of your pieces of armor, and that'll stack. And it all depends. There's so many different ones that will stack and won't stack. And a good thing with that is the last update they did a couple weeks ago, they made it now so that it actually says how much it affects your armor. Like it'll say -50 health, or -75 or +75 or whatever. It'll actually say. Before, it didn't say that. You had to kind of find out yourself. And it'll also tell you if it's stacking or not. It'll say non-stacking or stacking. So it's really helped out a lot in that regard. And another thing you can do with the armors to find out what it is, a lot of times they'll say unidentified. And there's a lot of different ways you can do. You can use ID kits, which is a whole different thing, because there's regular ID kits and there's superior ID kits. Same basic principle as the salvage kits, where superior is just a bigger one that can do more. The regular identification kit has 25 uses for 100 gold, and the superior is 100 uses for 500 gold. So, in conjunction with the salvage kits, you can use the identification kits. You find an armor dropped from an enemy, and it says unidentified. You can identify it to see what it is, which will bring more money in the merchant. Like, if you know you're going to sell it, you can identify it. It'll make it worth more, and then you can sell it to the merchant for a little bit more. Or, with certain items such as runes and weapon mods, once you identify it, you actually unlock it onto your character, so that your character has that rune or that weapon mod unlocked for their PvP character. So sometimes you might see people selling un-ID'd items, and you might be thinking, why would you buy something that's not identified? It's a gamble. Well, the thing about it is you can unlock it. If you buy it from them, you can unlock it, for your PvP character, and which is worth a lot more than the item sometimes. Now, another thing about salvage kits is if you find an item that says highly salvageable, once you ID it and it says highly salvageable, you want to use your expert salvage kit on it, because there's a good chance that it'll give you a rare crafting material. And in regards to your armor and putting runes on your armor, say you have some gloves with a superior absorption on them, and you want to get that superior absorption off and put it on new gloves. Like, you know, you got new armor, you want to take these runes off. It is possible, but you need to use an expert salvage kit for it. Earlier on in the game, they made it to where you had a chance to get it off, and from what I believe, and I've tried it a few times, what I believe there's now a 100% chance that when you use an expert salvage kit on your armor to get a rune off, that you will get that rune off. But of course, you won't. Your armor will be destroyed. You will only get that rune back. Someone correct me if I'm wrong, but I do believe it's a 100% chance now, because it used to be where you just had a chance, and sometimes you would salvage it and you'd lose your rune and you get like 5 wood planks for it, or 5 iron ingots or whatever. But that's the only way to get your rune back, is to destroy the piece of armor that you had. And if you think about it, I guess it's kind of realistic. You know, if you want to take something off of something else, it's going to destroy it. Like, say you have a sword, you want to take the sword pommel off, it's going to destroy the rest of the weapon. Now, I guess in a realistic setting, if you had a sword and you wanted to take the pommel and the hilt off, you could do that, and it wouldn't destroy the other one. But in this game, that's the way they have it set up, to where you, when you salvage something, you only get a choice of one of three items, you know, the hilt, the pommel, or crafting materials. So I hope this basic segment on salvaging helped out a little bit. I didn't have any notes on it, so it was pretty much off the top of my head, so I apologize for the rambling. But if anybody has any questions about it, anything I might have forgotten to mention or wasn't very clear on anything, please feel free to mention something on the message boards, and I'll try to explain a little bit better if I can. Now, for last week's contest, we had that Name That Place contest, and the winner of that was Mr. Monkington. He actually won, I think, the next day. So that was a pretty quick contest. He gave the correct answers. The first one was Arid Sea. Second one was Greenwich Courthouse. Third one was the Underworld. Fourth one was Zacian Challenge. And the fifth picture was the Sage Lands. So congratulations to him. He got his prizes already. And the second place in that contest was the Shattered Blade, who got the exact same answers correct, but only after Mr. Monkington. So he got second place. Next week's contest will be on Friday, which is, let's see, February 17th. And it will be at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, which is the same time that the contest was 2 weeks ago. And this will be a running contest this time. So all you runners, come out here and try your hand or legs, I guess you could say, at seeing how well and how fast you can run from Temple of Ages to Druid's Overlook. It's basically going to be the same as I did last time, or I attempted to do last running contest, which only, I believe, one person showed up. So this time I'm hoping, with the message board and a few more listeners now, I'm hoping that we can get a full party going on here. So check out the rules on the contest rules page off of the main guildcast.com webpage, and I'll be making a post about this in the message board, so check that out for a little bit more information, and I hope to see you all there. But that's going to be it for this show. I'll go ahead and wrap it up. This has been kind of a long show with a lot of information. I hope it helped everyone out a little bit. Check out the message board at guildcast.com/forum. Check out the new Frapper map at frapper.com/guildcastfans. Email me at sean@guildcast.com. And you can say hi to me in the game, Walmart Special, BBQ Ribs, and Priestess Julie. And my newest character, who is in pre-searing, his name is Jelani Gamba, which is actually an African name for Mighty Warrior, which I thought was kind of cool. But until next time, tell your friends, tell your guildmates about guildcast.com.